It is the happy hour show. It is noon on YouTube, but 5 o'clock somewhere, for love of God. Texting with my producers right there. Guess what, guys? Today is an exciting day. The regulars are all excited because my old friend Jay Croucher is in the house. Jay, the Pinot is flowing. I'm ready for you. I'm very excited. I'm thrilled to have you here. How are you, mate?
I'm good, mate. Yes, ominous that you're ready for me. Just kind of the way that you said that is frightening, but very happy to be here, Matthew. Good to see you again. Looking forward to chatting some ball, chatting some life. She'll chat about some bad movies as well. So, yeah, looking forward to it.
Yeah, Medici saying this guy is a genius, but don't tell him that. I don't know why we wouldn't tell you that, because I think you already think that. I don't know that it would reinforce something that isn't already there.
No, you know, the good thing about betting as frequently as I do, Matthew, is that it knocks you down to size and really sorts your ego out pretty regularly. So you might think that you're onto something, and then you're very much not, and you lose emphatically, and then your geniusness gets kind of beaten out of you. So I think my kind of calibration of where my intelligence stands is pretty solid.
But you, the last time I think, you know, we were basically on air together, you had won, or you were about to win, a significant, I mean, seriously, like buy a house kind of money on Arsenal. So have you since suffered a bad loss since the big Arsenal win?
I was on the Spurs to win the finals, which went about as bad as could possibly be imagined.
Yeah.
Not just that, but the coup de grace, or whatever that term is, was so I had the Spurs to win the title, and then I also had the Knicks -1.5 in game 4, the OG Anunoby buzzer beater game. So if anyone recalls, not only did the Knicks win that game and effectively clinch the finals, but they won by 1 and they didn't cover in game 4. And so that was the epitome of it knocks you down to size. So thank you very much, De'Aaron Fox, for not boxing out. Thank you very much, Victor Wembanyama, for not doing anything in the last 5 minutes of any of the finals games. So yeah, that didn't eat away all the Arsenal profits, but it took a decent bite into it.
Yeah, Wemby had a very bad series there in the finals. You and I were texting privately, not a chain that Connor was on. We had a separate thread, and I still made my way onto the thread with Connor and Jay. But I was tailing you quite a bit, and overall we were profitable for the NBA playoffs, but the finals, the Spurs definitely let us down a few times. There's no question about it. And Wemby just never came to play, which was very frustrating. Very, very frustrating.
Yeah, I will say, as being on a separate text thread with Connor that you're not on, Matthew, naturally, Connor Rogers is a pretty kind of level-headed, very intelligent person.
Yep.
The fandom really comes out when the Knicks are in the playoffs and making a deep run, and the bias really comes out. I don't think the Knicks, I don't think the refs made one positive call for the Knicks in Connor Rogers' eyes. He was very furious. There were some strange things said about the fine nation of France, which can never see the light of day. Connor Rogers really on one, but he ended up taking home the chocolates in the end.
Well, yeah. Thank God for Connor. It's been a good year. Everything's coming up, Connor. Except that Breece Hall is hurt, which we'll get to here in a second. But lots of news, Jay. We're going to get to some future bets with you, which we know that's always sort of your hallmark. It's one of the things you're best at. So we're going to get to some great, what your favorite NFL future bets are. Going to make everyone some money. But there's a bunch of news in the NFL. So I just kind of want to run through all of this and get your take on it. And we're going to start with, as I see a Colts banner behind you right there. Everyone knows you are a Colts man. Your Colts have signed Keenan Allen to a 1-year deal.
Yeah, which I think was much needed for my Colts, given that Michael Pittman was a huge part of that offense last season. Naturally, they didn't really replace him until this signing. Alec Pierce is obviously a question mark as to when he's going to be back and what condition he's going to be back with the ankle that he's dealing with. I think Josh Downs could soak up a lot more usage. I think he's a really good underrated wide receiver, but Keenan Allen, who is kind of had this strange second act or third or fourth act to his career, where he had 120 22 targets last season. And just his ability, I think, to kind of fill that Michael Pittman role. I'm not sure what the ceiling is for Allen. I think that he might just kind of eat into the production of the Colts receivers more than kind of provide standalone value himself. But I do think this is notable because it's going to have an impact on downs, on Pierce, who I think a lot of the upside of Pierce was maybe he could expand on the more kind of shorter to intermediate stuff, more over the middle stuff. That's going to be Keenan Allen's role. I think Tyler Warren takes the tiniest of hits, so he should operate still with plenty of value regardless of Allen. But yeah, I think this is notable because there are probably weeks where Keenan Allen might be the number one receiver on the Colts. I don't think he's going to be the number one receiver overall, but this is a much needed addition for that offense, and there will be some ripple effects to the rest of the depth chart.
Yeah, I generally agree with you. So I updated my ranks. I have Josh Downs now at wide receiver 35. You see it there on your screen. Pierce at 45, again, still dealing with the injury a little bit. And I have Keenan Allen at wide receiver 60, which means he doesn't have a lot of value in standard redraft leagues. But if you are in a deeper league, if you're in a best ball league, I don't mind a flyer because I do think there's going to be three or four pop-up games where, you know, you look up and somehow Keenan Allen 6 for 70 and 2 touchdowns. I do think that for the two wide receiver sets, it'll still be Josh Downs and Alec Pierce. And then they'll have, and then when Allen is out there, Allen has played outside some of his career, and so Josh Downs will move to the slot. So you'll see that. I'm with you on Tyler Warren. Look, I think he's still the tight end 4, but truthfully, what it does for me is I've seen some people say, like, oh, maybe he's close to Colston Loveland as the tight end 3. Maybe they're kind of interchangeable. I think this clearly puts Warren in the tight end 2 tier. Like, it's Bowers, McBride, Loveland as the tier 1 tight ends. And then I think the top of the tight end 2 tier is Tyler Warren, but it just separates him and Loveland a little bit more for me. So, yes, I agree with you that, you know, you've got a lot of guys that are good around the line of scrimmage, that are good in the short yardage area. I still like Josh Downs. Keenan Allen has to stay healthy again, right? But ultimately, he's going to eat into all these, and ultimately think this helps Daniel Jones, helps the offense. And if Pierce isn't ready, they need to find, I don't know, you know, they need to find a guy like Adonai Mitchell. They need a field stretcher, Jay, if Pierce isn't ready, because obviously those two guys will just crowd around the line of the scrimmage. It's worth noting that Keenan Allen, in every single season, he's played at least 10 games. He's had 70 receptions. So he's just a guy that seems to, you know, continue to produce. You know, he was wide receiver 37 on a points per game basis last year, which not amazing, but also like better than you probably thought.
Yeah, devastating that you don't like my man Russell Westbrook Akine to fill the Adonai Mitchell type of role. But yeah, I agree. I think this is maybe the guy who benefits most is just Daniel Jones having that kind of safety blanket over the middle. Because Jones, who I think is one of the most kind of compelling characters of this season, it's not just because I'm a Colts man, but I think just the range of outcomes with him is fascinating because we do... Some of us might forget that the Colts in the first 8 weeks or so of the season are having this greatest offense of all time. And so how much can Jones get back of his athleticism? And I think there's things that push in both directions where one, as a Colts man, I like to go back and watch early 2025 Colts highlights. And some of those throws from Daniel Jones, like he is absolutely ripping the ball off a standing start, layering it into tight windows. I'm just not sure that that kind of athleticism is going to be there, the power that he can generate. At the same time, I think a lot of people are really scarred by how bad Kirk Cousins looked off the Achilles because all preseason that year with Atlanta was like, no, Kirk's doing good. He's going to start week 1. He's going to be fine. And then there just wasn't any power there. I think the difference, though, is that Kirk, I think he did that injury on the Achilles when he was 35. Daniel Jones, 20, he was 28 when he did the injury. And so I think that is different. And I just think that with the way that, you know, sports science and kind of injury rehab has progressed, it's a little strange and it's probably drawing the bow a little bit too far. But I think that the way that like Jason Tatum came back from his Achilles for the Celtics and the way that DeJounte Murray came back from his Achilles with the Pelicans, not to bring back to the NBA. Like
I was
those
just
going to
say, let the record show that it took less, the undercast for 10 minutes when when will Jay bring up an NBA reference and the undercash there, under 10 minutes for you to mention an NBA player in reference to the NFL. But yeah, I get that with Daniel Jones. I do think he's a QB2 with some upside, which a lot of people qualify, but ultimately having somebody like Keenan Allen just helps the offense overall, right? And you could argue it helps Jonathan Taylor as well, just because it's he's a guy that can keep the chains moving and get them into scoring position more often, get them keep the offense on the field a little bit more. Want to move on to our friend, the man of emotion, Todd Bowles. Todd Bowles says, quote, he's not sure at this time if Emeka Abuka with that toe injury will be available week one. I'm not sure if the question here is if Todd Bowles is aware Emeka Abuka is on his team, or if he just wasn't sure if whether he'll be available week one. Todd Bowles, of course, the man of many emotions. Sometimes he blinks once, sometimes he blinks twice. It's all very exciting. Your thoughts on Emeka Abuka, who everyone is expecting this big breakout year after the hot start last year, tailed off towards the end, no Mike Evans. But the toe injury, to me, brings him down a little bit here.
Yeah, Todd Bowles is a very hard man to read. If he blinks three times, that means he's in trouble. And then you've got to send the authorities. Yes. But I think the thing here is that the way I would read this normally, if a coach who was a little bit more descriptive and animated had said this, I would read this as Emeka Abuka probably has turf toe or something along those lines. Like this is something that potentially could keep him out of week one of the season. We're 4 weeks away, then this is probably a more serious injury than was initially led on. Because it's Todd Bowles, that we have to, I think, assign some chance to the fact that he's just talking and he's just saying words with the media in front of him. Ultimately, I think however you slice it, this is, you have to have a little bit of concern over Abuka, but ultimately I would still think that he is likely to play week one. So yeah, I proceed with a little bit of caution, but ultimately all of the upside with Abuka still remains. He's still going to be the number one wide receiver and the clear highest upside guy in that room for an offense that you'd expect is going to throw a decent amount. So I wouldn't change the prognostication on Abuka too much.
I changed him a little bit. So I moved him down to 42 overall. Still has like kind of a fourth rounder. I'm at wide receiver 21. There's kind of like a bunch of wide receivers in that tier. And that's is sort of in that, round 3 to 4 tier. And so he was at the top of that tier for me. He's now towards the bottom of that tier because this could linger into the regular season. To your point, if it is a turf toe, just a little nervous here. Move Godwin up a few spots. I'm at wide receiver 33, 69 overall. That's right. I said 69. So I don't think it affects him too much, Jay, but yes, for a little bit, you just sort of move him towards the end of that, that tier where there's, all those guys, the McConkeys, the Devontae Smiths, all the guys kind of in that, the Rashee Rices of the world where they're good, but there's some question marks. To me, he's just now at the bottom of that tier. Speaking of guys that are in that tier, Chris Olave is in that tier, and he moves up a little bit for me because his teammate, Jordan Tyson, suffers a pretty bad hamstring injury. He's likely to miss potentially almost 2 weeks. Chance he starts the season on the pup. It's obviously not great, as you see the tweet there on your screen from Ian Rappaport. I moved Jordan Tyson all the way down to 113 overall, wide receiver 50. Still very bullish on his dynasty prospects, Jay, but this is tough for a rookie wide receiver who's dealt with hamstring injuries throughout college, throughout his career, coming in, and now he's going to miss the rest of training camp and he's not going to start the season with the offense. So tough look for Tyson. Still think he can be a factor down the stretch, but to me, our man Chris Olave, I know you're a Saints man, who dat, our man Chris Olave moves up a few spots here as well. Your thoughts on the Saints? I know you were a Saints man there for a minute, Jay.
Briefly, during the Spencer Rattler era, attached myself to the Saints and then jumped off the bandwagon as soon as they started to get good in the second half of the season. But I do think with Olave, he was likely to be the number one guy anyway. He's shown that He can produce with Tyler Shuck, even if there isn't a really strong number two wide receiver to take some attention off of him. So I think ultimately this news, while bad for the Saints and perhaps bad for their offensive ecosystem overall, I think it's good for Olave just when you factor in the additional targets he's going to take. And I think that the downside risk for Olave this season, outside of the obvious injury stuff and the concussion stuff, was that maybe Jordan Tyson's just a superstar from day one, and Jordan Tyson's going to take a lot more of this offense than we thought. That is now largely out the window for the time being, at least. And I think the other thing too is that, yeah, 2 months off a hamstring, that's a lot. So this is a bad hamstring, and he's had problems with his hamstrings before. He's had a lot of problems with his lower body before. And then the other thing is just that when he comes back, say he's back in 2 months, he's not going to be playing 80% of the snaps straight away. It's going to be a slow ramp up period off the soft tissue, particularly given his history. So yeah, there's not many leagues where I'd be super confident in drafting Jordan Tyson, and Chris Olave certainly sees a boost off of this.
Valiant Vincent weighs in saying, so much for all the Jordan Tyson has so much more value than Carnell Tate. And I think that's right, Vincent. Like I in my dynasty ranks, I moved Tate just ahead of Jordan Tyson. Obviously, Jeremiah Love, number one. Even in super flex leagues, I would move Mendoza down to four. But just, you know, we were so close on Tate and Tyson, and we like Tyson, maybe a little bit more explosive, better situation. But now, given this injury, and that, to your point, it's a similar injury, I moved Tate over Tyson in my dynasty and my rookie ranks here. Moved Tyler Shuck, who we love a lot, but I moved him down a little bit as well, again, without Tyson. The last thing here is Juwan Johnson, man of the hour, hero to many, friend of mine, Juwan Johnson, has a ring, of course, thanks to Live at Noon on the Cock. Juwan Johnson suddenly gets an uptick here. I moved him up a couple spots because he suddenly becomes the number two pass catcher on what we think is going to be a better than average Saints offense.
Yeah, you mentioning Juwan Johnson, me mentioning Jason Tatum, all the yes mentioned props are cashing early on in the show. But yeah, he will be, to your point, the number two pass catcher on what should be. I think people may be getting a little ahead of their skis or over their skis or whatever that saying is with the Saints offense and just how good it is going to be, just the median outcomes. The Saints last year, yeah, they finished well, but they were beating up a cupcake schedule. I was going to say pancake schedule, which could also apply, I guess, if you want to string it out. But I think the Saints, there is scope for this offense to be good, but I think we need to see it. But regardless, Juwan Johnson, yeah, he's the number two pass catcher in what should be a competent NFL offense.
Ved wants to know, has everyone started practicing near a substation? Just with all the injuries that's happening here. It's a good question, Ved. Very possibly. Worth noting one good stat for you here. With Tyler Shuck as the starting quarterback, Chris Olave, again, no Jordan Tyson, of course, last year, 18.8 fantasy points per game, 29% target share, over 82 yards per game. So as Stuntman Chuck says, soft tissue issue is another great team name. It's a good point. Soft tissue issue is a very good team name. Hey, I got some breaking news into the, got an alert, here on my little Fantasy Life app, but, or not the Fantasy Life app, I should say the Bleacher Nation app. It's no longer the Fantasy Life app, it is the Bleacher Nation app. But the Bleacher Nation app says the Giants are signing free agent running back Najee Harris. Your man, Jay Croucher, Najee Harris, your man Najee is going to go to the New York Giants. Your team. What a day for you. Your boy, yeah. Najee Harris to your team, the Giants. It's a one-year deal from Ian Rappaport and Mike Garofalo. They are reporting it. Of course, Harris was with the Chargers last year before he, too, had an Achilles injury.
Yeah, one of the strangest moments of my life was being at my daughter's preschool and one of the dads coming up to me and raising his fists and going, Najee Harris. I'd never met this guy before, but apparently someone was connecting my previously good name with Najee Harris. So that
I think the people that are Najee Harris fans, Jay, and there's so few of you, there's just so few of you. I just think there's like a camaraderie that when you guys see each other out in the streets in public and everything like that. So.
Yes, it's like an underground society trying to overthrow the government, Najee Harris fans. I do think.
But the first rule of Najee Harris Club is you don't talk about Najee Harris, obviously. You can't mention that, Jay.
That's a good point. So I think that what this signals, because it didn't really seem to me that the Giants needed another running back. They have a running back room of three guys who you would expect to see snaps. I wonder how much that Tyrone Tracy blown block on Jackson Dart's blind side made the Giants reevaluate what they needed to do here. And I wonder if I was being pessimistic, what this might signal about the Giants' expectations for Cam Scatterbill and just how much of a workload he is going to have. Ultimately, this is all speculation. Najee is just, he's another guy in that room for a team that will probably run the ball a decent amount. I can't imagine my man Najee is going to have much value, but he could eat in to potentially to the other guys in that room.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. I mean, it just feels like a depth signing. I don't know that Najee, especially, again, off of the injury that he had last year, how much burst he's going to have and really how much run he's going to have. But maybe this is just depth given, you know, Scatterbill's injury potential. And, I mean, that blown block by Tyrone Tracy, like, that was bad. And, and you never know on stuff like that. I mean, that clip has been blown up so much on social media, but, like, you know, did he audible out? Was Tyrone Tracy, did Dart call the wrong play? Was Tyrone Tracy supposed to run a flat, you know, and never supposed to block? And then, you know, just Dart didn't read the blitz. You never know on stuff like that. And we just won't know. But, you know, from the naked eye, it was a bad moment for Tyrone Tracy. And certainly Harris is a veteran that has some ties to the Giants coaching staff as well. So more of an annoyance for those of us that have invested in Scatterbill and potentially Tracy in larger leagues than any standalone value for your guy, Najee. Speaking of New York running backs, Jets head coach Aaron Glenn said that running back Breece Hall will be out 2 to 3 weeks, but he expects him to be ready for the regular season opener against the Titans. What a great, this is why, you know, everyone says, wow, Jets Titans. And I'm like, that is why there's betting. That is why there is fantasy. Jets-Titans week one. Are you kidding me? God bless betting. God bless fantasy. And God bless prediction markets. Anyway, Breece Hall seems like it's a little something about nothing here, but he is somebody that's dealt with injuries throughout his career. So maybe a slight raised eyebrow.
Yeah, I think so. I think to Glenn's point, he's probably going to be fine for week one. It seems like a grade one kind of groin injury, so he should be good to go. But there is some downside, at least with Breece, given that the rest of that Jets running back room is pretty good, I think, and particularly Braylon Allen with his upside. That I think that while Breece Hall, expect certainly he is going to be the number one guy in that room, he's going to have the lion's share of the carries. There are worlds where Breece being the number one guy looks more like 55-60% of the workload instead of 70-75%, and that matters a lot for where you're taking Breece Hall. That is kind of Jets Titans in week one.
Or as stuntman Chuck calls him, Breece Fall. Stuntman Chuck's been Breece on fall. Fire, Jay. I know you've been out of town. You've probably been able to watch any of the shows. Just so you know, to start the season, Stuntman Chuck has been on fire. Been a strong start to the season.
I saw him making a reference to saying something in a brackets Pat Doherty voice, as though Pat Doherty is getting grouped in with like Al Pacino or something, saying things in a certain voice, which I like. But yeah, ultimately, just kind of a little slight red flag on Breece, but he should have enough time, I think, to get over this and be 100% for the opener.
Yeah, I mean, I moved him down slightly. I'm at 31 overall, but still running back 14. I think it's a very solid mid-tier RB2 with some upside there. Three straight seasons of averaging at least 85 yards from scrimmage. For the first preseason game of the Jets last past Friday, he played 10 of the first 11 snaps. I think I wouldn't mind taking Braylon Allen late, who I think is a really interesting handcuff, as it were, or insurance running back. As we like to say, but yes, it's worth noting, keeping an eye on, but so far it seems like good news for Breece Hall, no serious injuries to him. And obviously, you know, the Jets always stay healthy, so I'm sure he's fine. I'm sure it'll be fine. You know, everyone loves playing in the Meadowlands. Damian Vigone says, Jay, might put my life savings on Aaron Glenn, coach of the year. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I played that game last year, Damien. It didn't go well on Aaron Glenn, coach of the year. I do like the thought where I think that some of these guys, teams overachieve in the NFL and sometimes just go 4 or 5 wins over their win total. And so I think that the gap between guys like Aaron Glenn, Todd Monk, Duncan, their coach of the year prices and the make playoff prices for the Jets and the Browns are a little bit too far apart. At the same time, you're betting on success for the New York Jets, which is always fraught with peril. I also don't think Aaron Glenn is a particularly good coach, but I do think there is some weird upside with the Jets just because Geno Smith. I think that we may forget a bit too quickly that from 2022 to 2024, Geno Smith was like a good above average quarterback. He was atrocious last year in Vegas, but I'm not sure they were running a real NFL team last year and a real NFL offense. And Geno was okay when he was kept clean. It's just that he was never clean in that offense. So I think there are worlds where Geno Smith could be a competent, approaching kind of league average-ish starter with a much better offensive line and some weapons. So yeah, and the other thing too, Matthew, with the Jets is that like if they aren't competent this year, then I think everyone's getting fired. So I think that this team has incentive to try and push to be a 7-8 win team and won't perhaps tank as they probably should to get a quarterback of the future. So yeah, I think there are, and the Jets have an easy schedule too. So I wouldn't be putting the life savings on Aaron Glenn, but there is some scope, I think, for the Jets to surprise a bit.
Big Caboose 321 says, when I have a draft and look at Breece Hall on my roster, I'm filled with existential dread. That's also, by the way, a good fantasy team name, existential dread. I don't know. I think Breece Hall's going to be fine, actually. I think Breece Hall's going to be fine. And I agree with you. As long as Geno Smith is like basically, you know, the 18th best quarterback in the NFL, the 20th, like he just needs to be competent. He doesn't need to be good. He just needs to be like competent. And I think if he's competent, I think the Jets have a chance to surprise some people. Maybe not make the playoffs, but you know, at least be, you know, reasonable, you know, good adjacent, competitive adjacent. Yes. As we talk about. All right, let's move over to a team that is legitimately good, and that's the Bears. And our man, somebody we've talked about on the show quite a bit, Kyle Manungai, expected to miss multiple weeks with a hyperextended knee. Thank you, Grady Jarrett. Good job, Grady. Good job. Good effort there. So he gets tackled in practice. He's got a hyperextended knee. He's going to miss multiple weeks here. So, you know, rocket ship emoji for DeAndre Swift, Jay?
I guess so. Certainly early on. I think that the Bears offensive line multiplied by Ben Johnson, that scheme is just one of the surest things just in terms of how they generate yards before contact. This is going to be one of the best offenses in football, one of the best running games in football. And we saw that, you know, DeAndre Swift, he has that level of comfort already in this scheme. He has the trust of the coaching staff. So yeah, Manungai is perhaps the more interesting guy longer term and had probably more upside than DeAndre Swift just because he's younger and we've seen less of him. But yeah, when you're talking about multiple weeks with a hyperextended knee, I think there's a decent chance that this extends into the season or at least pushes Manungai further behind Swift in the pecking order. So yeah, DeAndre Swift, again, one of the least sexy names that you can ever draft because he's been around forever and everyone's been burned by DeAndre Swift over the journey. But I think we saw last year that he's still got plenty in the tank and he's still going to be very useful. So he is the exact type of profile that gets drafted later than he should just because he isn't super exciting.
Yeah, I mean, look, I'm at 45 overall. I'm at running back 19. I think he is one of the better values in the draft. Again, not only is Kyle Manungai potentially going to miss some time or start slow, but also Luther Burden's banged up a little bit. So just in terms of overall touching the ball on what we think is going to be a really good offense, DeAndre Swift is somebody who, you know, was top 12 among running backs last year in rushing yards per game. He's been a top 24 running back last year in 75% of his games. Like, he's just somebody that has a very high floor, doesn't get hurt, shows up a lot. It's going to be a pretty good offense. If you want to go read my 100 facts you need to know before you draft, it's a column on fantasylife.com. It's free. I'm a company man. I have a bunch of basically pro DeAndre Swift facts where I just don't think people appreciate. This is a guy that was, was a upper tier RB2 last year, and he's being drafted as a low end or mid, you know, as a flex running back. And so I'm higher on him than consensus. But more importantly, I just think he's, to your point, he's not sexy. People are just sort of like over him. But like, I think he's somebody who absolutely outperforms his ADP. And the Manungai injury only helps Swift's game. I moved Manungai down to running back 42, by the way. Still useful at the end of drafts. Still ultimately, I think, is going to get, you know, a decent amount of workload. But doesn't catch passes. The injury doesn't hurt. So more of a running back 4 or 5 for me. Okay. One more running back injury for you here. And that's Jeremiah Love. So the positives here, Jay, are that in the first preseason game, Jeremiah Love played 16 of the 22 snaps in the first two drives for Arizona in their first preseason game. The bad news, of course, is that he then gets injured and is dealing with a high ankle sprain. But so many people are talking about, like, why was he out there? And I think that's a fair criticism. But if you look past that, the positives are he was out there. There's no concerns about Tyler Allgeier. They clearly want Jeremiah Love to be the guy. It's just, it's a high ankle sprain. So how far down are we moving Jeremiah Love?
Yeah, again, I would be a little bit concerned just because it seems like he'll probably be okay for the opener. There's going to have been, I think, like 31 days will have elapsed between the injury and week one, their game against the Chargers. But the issue is with high ankle sprains, and this doesn't seem like a particularly bad one. It's like kind of the ongoing joke of how high or how low is the high ankle sprain. It's one of the lower high ankle sprains that we've seen. But I do think that there are going to be residual effects from this. We see that when guys come back from high ankle sprains, it does typically sap their explosiveness a little bit. Their explosive metrics tend to go down coming off a high ankle sprain. I know CD Lamb talked about this last season when he came back from the high ankle sprain. Yeah, you call him mates. Okay. I call him CD Lamb. But when CD Lamb, when he came back, he spoke about how, you know, he didn't really feel like himself. And I think that that may be the case. There's that downside with Love. But at the same time, I think that just his profile, the amount of usage that he'll get, obviously we know the talent. I think ultimately he'll be fine. And the upside is that this has happened now, you know, 4 weeks before the season, as opposed to in season. But yeah, it's a little bit of a concern, but ultimately I don't think it should knock him too much.
Aloha Bricks checking in, Jay, and he says, what's the panic level on this Love injury? You know, I mean, like on a scale of 1 to 10, I'd say like a 3, maybe a 4. Like
it's not 3 and a half.
It's not ideal, but it's like, it's also like he'll be, even if he misses week one, he ultimately should be fine. He's young, and it's clear that he's going to have a big role on this Cardinals team. I moved him down from just down to running back 15. I'm at 33 overall. Allgeier moves up a little bit. I'm at running back 43 and 132 overall. So, you know, 13th, 14th round for Allgeier, Jeremiah Love right there and like into the third, top of the fourth for Jeremiah Love. Speaking of the Cardinals, though, Jay, it is time for your favorite futures. And one of your favorite futures, because we know you love these crappy teams, is the Arizona Cardinals over 3.5 wins.
Yeah, this one kind of reminds me how Cousin Sal on Bill Simmons' podcast, he used to do his favorite prop for the Super Bowl, and it was always like Gary Russell over 1.5 yards rushing and Cardinals Steelers, just the stupidest one. And I feel like this is my version of the Gary Russell rushing over. The Cardinals over 3.5 wins, and the reasons why. Firstly, I don't understand why everyone has just assumed that the Cardinals, when did we decide that the Cardinals were just absolutely terrible and horrific and were warranting a 3.5 win total? This team last year when Brissett took over as the starter, so week six on, they were 14th in success rate as an offense. The first half of the season before all of their defensive players got injured, they were the most injured team in the league last year. They were a league average defense. I think the roster overall is better than it was last year. I think this team has talent. We know about the players at the skill positions. For a 3.5 win total team, they probably have more fantasy relevant players than anyone who's ever had that win total. When you think about Trey McBride and Marvin Harrison and Jeremiah Love and Michael Wilson, I think Brissett is a competent quarterback. And so I think the offense will be okay behind an okay offensive line too. And then I think the defense can be better than it was last year. And the main thing with the Cardinals and the reason why their win total is so low is that you look at the schedule and it's brutal. They have the toughest schedule in the league. They play in the NFC West. But the thing is that with schedules, yeah, it's easy to chalk up losses in the middle of August when you just look at the names. And I think it's just a little bit more difficult to absorb that, you know, injuries are going to happen. The schedule is probably not going to be as hard as it looks right now. Brock Purdy will get hurt and they'll play Mac Jones instead in one of the Niners. Yeah, like stuff like that will happen. Last year, the Bears were projected to have the second hardest schedule in the NFL going into the season. They ended up with the fourth easiest because the Lions were a bit worse than expected. The Vikings were a bit worse than expected. They got to play Baltimore and Cincinnati without Lamar Jackson and Joe Burrow. So ultimately, I think this Cardinals, I don't think they're going to be particularly good, but I do think that they will be competent enough to go 4-13, and that's all you need here. So Matthew, I'm stealing this from Matt Harmon. I'm sick and I didn't think of this myself, but I am a little Cardinals curious this season. I think that this team can be okay.
I like that. I'm a shout out Matt Harmon, and I like that. I'm a little Cardinals curious. Fair enough. Look, I like the over 3.5. The other thing is I just think, you know, an improvement of the coaching staff. I mean, you know, like, listen, we think LaFleur is a good coach. We think he's a good mind. So yeah, with a healthier defense and good skill players, and can they sneak one out or two? 3.5 is just such a low number here. All right, so the Cardinals over 3.5 wins. Fair enough. And on that one, I don't like this one. Cowboys to win the NFC East. By the way, someone out there throwing out a good fantasy football team name is Success Adjacent. Cardinals Curious would also be a good fantasy football team name. But at, you know, you last year, of course, famously, you were in on the Giants to win the NFC East. And so now here you are, Jay. You want the Cowboys to win the NFC East.
To be clear, I was on the Giants at like 80-1 to win the NFC East, and they didn't. But yeah, I am also a little Cowboy curious, Matthew. This team, which is not as much as a limb to go out on as the Cardinals, but the main thing here is that offense is more stable year to year than defense. And I'm very confident in this Cowboys offense. They were the number 5 offense in the league last year, despite CeeDee Lamb being injured, missing time, and then playing hurt when he got back. The young offensive line that I think will continue to improve. So I think this offense is going to be elite. Dak Prescott, very stable as a top-end quarterback. And the defense last year was the worst in the league. And I don't think it can really get worse. I think that it will regress. Defense tends to just regress year to year. Even if your defense isn't particularly good, just through luck and turnovers, you can just kind of stumble into being slightly below average. And I think the Cowboys, I think they've made meaningful upgrades. They've made a change at defensive coordinator, creates a bit more variance. They got a full season of Quinn and Williams. They add Rashawn Gary, Kobe Durant. They have 2 first rounders that they drafted on defense in Malachi Lawrence at edge rusher. And I think more importantly, Caleb Downs, who should be excellent from the get-go. So I just think it all adds up to a team that can be a top 4 offense, and then I think can approach league average on defense, or at least be the 18th best defense instead of the 32nd. And when you think about the questions that the Giants have across the board, the Eagles with a new offense, losing AJ Brown, and also the Eagles, a team that was more dependent on their defense, which has a bit more kind of variance year to year. And then your Commanders, who, if Jaden Daniels is healthy, the Commanders will be fine. But I think the Laremy Tunsil injury really hurts them there. So I think that the Cowboys plus 215, I think that they should be shorter than that. I think they should be more bunch with the Eagles as the favorite in this division.
Yeah, I don't mind those. I don't mind the bet here because I agree with you. Listen, I do think the defense is, I think the offense is going to be very good. And the NFC East is such a crazy division where it feels like there's a different winner almost every other year, despite the Eagles' dominance. You know, I mean, again, the Commanders won a couple of years ago. And it's so, I don't mind the bet. If their defense is decent, maybe the Eagles, screw up. I mean, again, new offense coordinator could be a disaster. Jalen Hurts under center quite a bit. If the Commanders aren't right there, we don't think the Giants are ready. I could absolutely see the Cowboys doing it. By the way, SEC Man 01, I don't know if you saw this on your screen, but he says what you actually meant to say is that you're ankle curious. Is that you're ankle curious? And so I just, you know, listen, because you're here just as a special guest.
Oh, wow. Full shot. Come on, man. Wow. No socks.
No socks. That's right.
Organic.
Yeah.
Organic little, ankle showing.
Little ankle. Yeah. Go.
Wow. There you go. Onlyankles.com.
Yeah. For all my followers on Ankle Fans.
The Anklers. The Anklets.
The Anklets. We're all in
with,
here.
With 2 T's and an E. Yeah. Terrifying. Yes, terrifying
exactly.
Stuff.
It's a good backup name. All right. Jay, God help us, says Matt Ennis 06. What do you mean, God help you? You're welcome, is what you are, Matt Ennis. You're welcome. You don't always get ankle content, but, you know, Jay's here. We've got a special guest. So, you know what? I'm gonna treat you guys, as Cobra Kiger says, freshly shaved. You know what? Listen, when you get my age, hair grows in a lot of weird places, but not on my ankles, for the love of God.
I've never shaved my ankles or even entertained the thought.
Yeah, of course. It's outrageous. Weird. People are crazy. All right. So after trashing the Cardinals under Kyler Murray from last year, right, and pointing out how much better they were under Jacoby Brissett, you like the Vikings to win the NFC North, basically 50, you know, 5-1, more or less. It's a plus 510. And you like them with Kyler Murray, my man, Kyler Murray. Never early, just wrong. I'm sorry, never wrong, just early. Actually, God.
Yeah, you damn it. That up.
Yeah. Or maybe so, I didn't. Maybe it's a Freudian slip. Never wrong, just early. Kyler Murray, you like the Vikings to win the NFC North. I'll shut up now.
I'll get us back on the rails, Matthew, with my favorite random fact from last NFL season is that the Vikings went 9-8. The team had a winning record. They certainly had the vibes of a 5-12, 6-11 team. They actually went 9-8. The Lions were the team that finished last in the NFC North. And so this is largely a bet on two things. One, on Brian Flores just being able to manufacture a top 10 elite defense. The Vikings had the number 3 defense in the league last year. The year before that, they had the number 2 defense. They do not have the talent level of a top 3 defense. They did not have it last year or the year before. Brian Flores is a magician, and I'm just going to bank on his ability to craft a top 10 defense. And then all you need, really, to compete in this division, if you've got a top 10 defense, is to have a solid offense. It doesn't have to be an all-world, absolutely elite offense. It just needs to be competent, average to above average. And I think that Kevin O'Connell can get there with Kyler Murray. Kyler's kind of being talked about as the next iteration of, you know, all these reclamation quarterbacks like Baker Mayfield and Sam Darnold and Geno Smith. Like, Kyler is, like, those guys all went from heading out of the league to, you know, slightly above average. Kyler's not far off there already. Kyler has been a fine quarterback when he's been in the league. He's been a kind of league average quarterback. And now he's arguably in the best context of his career with Kevin O'Connell. And so I think that the offensive line should be solid. Christian Darius saw another year removed from the ACL. We know all about the weapons. We know about Justin Jefferson and Juwan Jennings, who's a solid signing. TJ Hawkinson, another year removed from his injury. Kevin O'Connell's never actually had a top 12 offense in the NFL, despite being thought of as this kind of genius play caller. But I do think Kevin O'Connell is a solid offensive-minded coach. And so I think this offense is just going to be competent across the board. And you pair that with what I think will be a really good defense because of Flores, and I think this can be a double-digit win team. And then the rest of the division, the Packers are going to be without Micah Parsons for some time, and the offensive line is in flux. The Bears, as Ben Johnson has said himself, are the number one regression candidate in the NFL. And then the Lions, who have a very easy schedule, and I think they should be the favorite just because of that schedule, they have huge issues on defense with Brian Branch and Kirby Joseph both on the pup list. Obviously, we know what happened with Terry and Arnold. Kirby Joseph, Matthew, a couple of weeks ago, he was talking about what happened with his knee, where he got injured in the start of last season. It was week to week and has just never been seen from since. He said a couple of weeks ago, when I got the MRI, I said, the only person that can help me with this is God. That's not what I want to hear about my defensive player of the year candidate safety. With God as the only person who can save his name. So there's a lot of question marks on that Lions defense. I think that the Vikings are well positioned to be maybe not the highest upside team in the world, because I don't think, you know, Kyler has that MVP ballot type of upside anymore. But I think this can be a 10-11 win team, and a plus 510 to win the division. I think that is value.
Yeah, I mean, the Lions are literally the favorite, as you mentioned, with the schedule, and then Green Bay and Chicago at plus 305. I mean, I think the Bears are interesting, too, but certainly great defense, great coach. We've seen them win this division before, very tough, but I don't mind that bet at all. Let's move to the Chargers now, and a McConkulous one here, Ladd McConkey, the McConkulous man himself, over 899.5 receiving yards. So talk to me about McConkey in this Mike McDaniel offense, Jay.
Yeah, so this is a simple one. Keenan Allen, now of my Colts, he is vacating 122 targets in that Chargers offense. A lot of those targets from the part of the field where Ladd McConkey can most feast, and that is out of the slot. And so I think that just the fact that those targets are gone and they haven't really been replaced, it's just like it's going to be by committee somewhat, but I think Ladd McConkey is going to absorb a ton of those targets. McConkey last year, and I get it, like it was the year from hell for McConkey. Fantasy managers were livid with what he served up relative to expectations, but I think between Allen going, between being used in the slot more often, between having, I think, an elite offensive coordinator who can scheme up McConkey and use him in creative ways to generate more explosives. Last year, McConkey, like his contested catch rate, which was crazy high as a rookie, was crazy low. He just, every 50-50 ball, it seemed like he was losing. So I think ultimately, like you just step back, it's Mike McDaniel, it's the Chargers with both of their tackles healthy, it's Justin Herbert, and McConkey, I think, is clearly, by margin, the number one wide receiver on that team. And so he had 1,149 receiving yards as a rookie. That was with missing a game as well. So I think that he should be able to get 900-plus receiving yards. Ladd McConkey is someone, like, if anyone's going to make, I don't think this is going to happen, but if someone were to make the JSN type of leap, I think McConkey would be a prime candidate. Him and Devontae Smith would be the two that I'd look at for that.
Yeah. I mean, and we were talking earlier in this, in the season, in the preseason, with Dan Graziano, who, you know, Dan, of course, we've had dinner together, me, you, and Dan. And so he's on the show, and he was at Chargers camp, who said, it's clear that the passing offense is going through McConkey. It's worth noting that Mike McDaniel had at least one 900 yard receiver in every single season he was coaching Miami. Of course, it's Waddle and Tyreek Hill, but we all really like McConkey's talent. And again, the line's just 899.5. So I'm on that bet with you as well. Let's move here to Philadelphia. We just got a few minutes left, but Jalen Hurts over 424.5 rushing yards. He's had at least 600 rushing yards in four of the past five seasons, right? You know, so Jalen Hurts, another year to get to this number.
Yeah, this line's been bouncing around from 400 to 424.5, so obviously the lower the better. But I think Hurts, last year he had 424 rushing yards, and I think that that is basically his floor, and that's where it's set. This year, Hurts has been incredibly durable all throughout his career. Last year, he only had 1.6 designed runs per game, non-sneaks. That was basically, it's never been nearly that low. It's basically half as much as his next lowest point in terms of designed runs. I think last year we learned with the Eagles offense, if we don't have the threat of Jalen Hurts as a runner, then this offense just doesn't work. And I think that everything we've heard out of training camp is that Sean Mannion is dialing up a lot of design runs for Hurts. He looks just a lot leaner and more spry. Everyone's been raving about his speed in camp. And so I think we're just going to see more of Jalen Hurts as a runner, which obviously has a lot of fantasy repercussions as well if he's going to be using his legs more. So I think that Hurts also just, he doesn't have AJ Brown to bail him out with go balls nearly as much. I think that Hurts is going to be running more this year than he was last year.
No, I agree with that. I'm in on a big year from Jalen Hurts. I have him fairly high, much higher than consensus. But to your point, like, he's hit this in every year but one, except for last year where he was just a few yards short. So, yeah, give me Jalen Hurts over 424.5 rushing yards. Now, this one's a really interesting one because I know a lot of people think, and I don't think they realize this. So they hear you and they know that you're a professional bettor. And of course, they've watched you for years, you and I for years on Happy Hour. But I think some people are like, oh, he's a professional bettor. So all the bets, he just likes the bets in terms of he thinks this is absolutely going to happen. And while that's true in some cases, the other cases is where you're looking at a market. You are somebody who's a former market maker himself. You spent 5 years running the trade desk at a major betting operation in the world. And so sometimes you just see a mispriced line and you just really like, you're like, the odds shouldn't be that. And I feel like that's the case here. Malik Nabers to get at least 1,500 receiving yards, that's a 10-1.
Yeah, so Nabers is the ultimate high variance player, I think. And a lot of times these lines are just derived off whatever your kind of over-under for the season is. And then it's this kind of same standard deviation that's applied. The right tail outcomes for Malik Nabers are pretty enticing. And I think that Nabers, he just has immense upside where what if the knee is just fine? Like, what if the knee is better than anticipated. And all the reports out of camp have been very positive. Looks like he's trending towards playing in week one. And if he is just fine, which for a player as young as him, I think is well within the range of outcomes, then it's like, who's the number two receiver behind Malik Nabers on this offense? Like, it's Malachi Fields or Darius Slayton. Like, Malik Nabers, the one healthy year he's had in the NFL, his rookie season, he led the NFL in terms of target percentage on his team. So I think that Nabers, between the talent, which is undoubted, we know about the talent, it's why he was taken so high in the draft, between his ability to earn targets, between the lack of competition, and between the health upside, I just think there are worlds where we look back and Malik Nabers is a top three wide receiver. Just for context, like 1,500 yards, that generally means you're the third or fourth best receiver in the NFL. I think that's well within the range of outcomes for Nabers. So he's someone where not as interested in the median kind of outcomes for Nabers, but the upside I think is immense.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that. By the way, Odell Beckham Jr. in the mix for that number two wide receiver after Nabers. And some camp reports are like, hey, it's going to be Isaiah Likely. Dan says, what if the knee is fine? And yeah, what if I win the lottery? So there's some skepticism out there for Malik Nabers, but I disagree. I've seen a couple of 10-second highlight clips from training camp, and that's all I need to see. That confirms my priors. He's obviously 100% healthy. When you've seen just him running one route in shorts, well, clearly he's all the way back.
He's good to go. Don't worry about it, Dan.
Yeah, he's all the way back. Jay, you and I are in the middle of a, I have to be a company man. You and I are in the middle of a guillotine league draft. All of the NBC gang, we're doing that one. It is taking quite a while because there's a few slow pokes in the draft. But it gives me an excuse to bring it up is that everyone should join a guillotine league. Go to guillotineleagues.com, download the app or just play it online. We've got a brand new app this year. It's much improved. The technology, the app, the experience. We put a lot of work into it. I think it's much better this year.
I would say the app has made a JSN 2025 type of leap, really exploded onto the scene. In our league that we're drafting at the moment, Matthew, the guillotine is all about, you're supposed to draft a high floor because you just can't have, the goose eggs and stuff. I've gone the other way. I've taken Malik Nabers and Christian McCaffrey, these like really high upside guys who may not even play week one. So I'm going with a different approach there, probably the wrong approach, but hopefully those guys are good to go.
No, I think it's a very Jay approach, because what will happen there is that either you will just crush us all because they're all healthy, or they won't be, and then you'll be done with us, and you'll be like, good, I don't have to deal with this anymore, and I'm out. I don't have to set my lineup and figure it out. By the way, and if you want to play in a paid league, by the way, we're taking no fees, so you can all the prize money go, all the entry fees are in the prize pool. A lot of other places they take a good cut off the top, but we're not doing that here as well. Listen, Jay, thank you so much for doing this. Hopefully, we get to see you again soon.
Absolutely. A pleasure, Matthew. Always fun to chat.
Always fun. So listen, everyone follow you on Twitter and Instagram at CroucherJD. And you can check out his work, of course, at NBC Sports. Say hi to Connor for me when you see him in the halls. Jay, it is closing time, which means, as you know, you don't have to go home, but you can't stay here. So the regulars have been on fire. I appreciate you guys all so much. Another great show tomorrow, live at noon Wednesday, noon Eastern. And of course, please like and subscribe to the YouTube channel. For Jay Croucher, I'm Matthew Berry. We will see you all tomorrow. Peace.